Welcome to the Happy Being Well podcast, where we talk about strategies and insights so you can live happy being well with your host, Rita Ferrugia. This podcast is presented by happybeingwell.com, your online store providing the best in all-natural wellness products, such as natural essential oils, all-natural bath products, all-natural facial masks, all-natural deodorants, irresistible leggings, crystals, including crystal home decor and kitchen items, herbal teas, natural sleep aids, and so much more natural wellness goodies at happybeingwell.com. Free shipping on any order within the USA at happybeingwell.com. Now enjoy the show.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Happy Being Well. We have an exciting guest as usual. I really, really am excited to dive into today's topic because it's, it's an interesting dance between, as we go through life, between the negative emotions and positive emotions, as we grapple with living in a duality, meaning, you know, there's good stuff that happens to us and there's bad stuff that happens to us. And, you know, how do we process and deal in a very healthy way without focusing on one extreme to the other extreme so much and kind of being that nice balance. And today we have author and therapist Chelsea Harvey Garner, who wrote a book about this.
Yes.
It's called A Pity Party is Still a Party, A Feel-Good Guide to Feeling Bad. So she literally explores, you know, the necessity of crying and feeling all painful emotions. Chelsea argues pain is part of the human experience, not a sign of failure, weakness, or spiritual disfavor. We all must lean into these uncomfortable feelings and ultimately live a happier, healthier life. So Chelsea, please enlighten us into how... Because I know there's other people that go into the extreme and they all they want to do, they're addicted to trauma dumping on their, you know, friends or whatever. Like they're always focusing on, they're anchored into like that complaining state and they always look for things to complain about or feel sad about, right? But we don't want to, we want to have that fine balance and most importantly, healthy. And as we all know, I think we all have come to a realization that if we go to the other extreme of always focusing on positive and happy and stuffing down those negative feelings, that's not healthy either because we're denying, you know, the unpleasant parts of life that we all experience. So talk to us about, well, first of all, what made you write the book? And secondly, how do we achieve this balance in a healthy way?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me. I love to talk about this stuff. So thank you for the question. What made me want to write the book? So in 2017, the end of 2017, I was becoming a therapist and I had always been in therapy myself. I'm one of those people who just kind of grew up in a home where it was normalized. I didn't know that it was considered weird. I think I started going to therapy when I was 13. And I just loved it. I literally just enjoyed the space to talk about really deep, honest things. And so years later, I'm becoming one myself. And that year, my grandmother, who raised me and was basically my mother figure, she passed away after several years of being very ill. So I think, you know, at that point in my life, I was really reckoning with these questions of like, embracing, you know, these inevitable aspects of life, like these things that just seem to be happening for everyone. Growing up, I don't think I was ever really one of the people who was kind of indoctrinated into the positivity club. Like, you know, it wasn't really something that was encouraged of me to always be positive in my home. But I was raised in Nebraska, so there was a lot of toxic positivity going on around me. And I think I just found it like super confusing to be around those people, especially during grief, especially now that I was like embarking on this career as a professional therapist. And so I think it was more like those events were kind of this. It built a crescendo in me of needing to sort of speak to culture at large, feeling the need to speak beyond just the therapy space and talk about why it's so hard for us to approach these things. But then the pandemic happened just, you know, a couple months after my agent and I sold this book. And so that spun my whole perspective on it into a new level, basically, of feeling like, oh, wow, I have so much more to say about this. And it feels like so many people are interested in it in this moment that maybe weren't 6 months ago, which I don't want to call it lucky because that feels gross to call a pandemic a lucky career turn for me. But it really did happen in that way. And it was really kind of, it was surreal for me. And it's been, mm-hmm. it's continued to be surreal. Like the mental health push since then. I mean, people are talking about therapy in a way that I've never heard people talk about therapy.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, it's really become mainstream. I mean, now we even have celebrities, you know, talking about it and really jumping on board. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey, like now he's, you know, sharing the stage with Tony Robbins and, mm-hmm. You know, selling personal development programs and stuff like that to help people evolve their mind and be more mentally fit to grapple with life and in healthy ways so that they can focus and achieve what they want to achieve and feel what they want to feel in life. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of being kind of not really taking control of your life, you know, but learning tools and mechanisms to take control of your life, right? Mm-hmm. So like bad things happen. So let's get into this. So bad things happen. It's mm-hmm. not healthy to deny them, deny those painful experiences, but we should feel them. Mm-hmm. So what, how does that look like in a healthy way?
Yeah. I think, you know, for this part of the book, like the nitty gritty around like daily practices, a lot of my influence really came from Buddhist meditation teachings. You know, in my 20s, during the time when my grandmother was sick and I was going through, you know, my own personal relational traumas and poverty, et cetera, right? Being 20, that's just hard. No matter what, I was drawing from the influence of a lot of like, you know, teachers, Pema Chodron, the Buddhist teachers of our modern day. I was really interested in mindfulness and I found that when we're present, this is, you know, their teaching, when we're present with what's happening for us, when we're really in our bodies, we're in this moment, it doesn't actually take that long for most things to move through us, right? Whether that's joy, excitement, anxiety, grief, dread, any of the things, they are, you know, like weather happening inside of us, their internal weather. And I just have found that to be really true for myself. And being willing to just have a life that creates space for that flexibility, where, you know, I personally have decided to have a life where I'm not constantly like surveilled. I mean, I feel fortunate to be able to work for myself, but it was a lot of effort as well, because a lot of people are in environments where they're not able to feel things. Like it's taboo for someone to cry. Even if that cry would maybe last 2 minutes, you could get in trouble for the, you know, rest of the week at your job. So I think that's really what I want to encourage people to do, everyone, like to create spaces where we're just allowed to move through emotion. We don't question each other's sanity and stability when we see people feeling a number of things in one day, because actually that's really healthy. And, you know, that person is probably more stable than someone who's kind of repressing everything, positive, negative, and just waiting for some magical moment when we're going to just dump all that, which really doesn't come.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And I'm just like, you kind of triggered memories and flashbacks of my corporate days when I was working in corporate. And, you know, I, over a long period of time, I now all these flashes of memories, you know, from different offices and stuff like that through all my long journey of working as a corporate employee. I remember, you know, girls catching instances of girls, like they would cry and hide in the bathroom, right? To cry. Mm-hmm. Don't know what, you know, it could be a personal situation. Maybe we don't know, but I do remember that. And it's like, you know, that they don't want to talk about, you know, it's kind of like this normal, you have to hide it. And, yeah. And then I do remember there's people that, like you say, like in the, I remember working with them where they're always happy, chipper, very like you can tell, you can feel like I'm an empath, so I can feel people's energy. Like when they're stuffing things down or hiding it or putting on a fake face. Mm-hmm. And what happens is it comes out in other ways, though. Like, yep. These people are tend to be, in my experience, they will lash out or project onto other people in other ways. Like, they can be toxic in other ways because they're holding all of their stuff, because it's living in the unconscious mind. It's still there. It's just buried in, you know, the basement, like, or our unconscious mind. Yes. So consciously, we're focusing other things, but it's coming up in symbolic ways, through projection.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I mean, I really try to avoid sort of labeling people as like toxic or not, but I do think we all possess the capacity to become more emotionally agile, and we all possess the capacity to remain emotionally fragile, which I do think is actually more a symptom of the culture we're in. I actually think children are a great example of emotional movability. It's transcendent. Like, an emotion will come, it will feel really intense, and then it passes. And I think that's really our nature. And as we move up into this culture where we're taught to kind of hide that and feel ashamed of it, we actually become really rigid. And we pound and, you know, like, bury this like pressure and charge around these emotions, thinking they mean something about us, that we're flawed in some way, right? And I think people who sort of don't work with the just reality of emotion as kind of a near constant part of our experience, they do tend to, when they finally get to a point, because I've certainly been here myself, you know, when we get to a point where it's just inevitable that we have to feel it, we feel somehow less equipped, because it's like there's like this lack of experience, the muscles kind of atrophied. And those are the moments where I feel less in control, right? And, you know, more petty, or kind of the parts of myself that maybe I'd rather move through aren't, you know, I don't have access to my higher self in those moments.
Good point. And also, it's a form of release. Like, you know, I'm sure we've all experienced, you know, something that makes us really feel sad. Like, maybe it's a relationship that, you know, needed to end. And, you know, like, breaking up is always, it's not fun, not easy, mm-hmm. you know, just due to the personal history you have with that person, to now get familiar with unbreaking that bond, mm-hmm. or seeing them and talking to them, right? The unfamiliarity with that. So in that initial, you know, break, you're going to cry. And after you cry, it's like a release. You feel good, and you kind of like accept reality of the, you know, this is not healthy to stay in this, and now time to move on. And you just move on, and you get excited, you meet somebody else, right? Life goes on. So it's that release. I feel like, you know, when you have a good cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a release. And I think when we have moved through like the most intense part of an emotion, it's not that it's like gone forever necessarily. It's more like I feel that it kind of recedes into just one part of the broader picture of the landscape of our lives. And so for me, it's really the goal is to have like this broad perspective and to be just open at any given moment to like the fullness of what it means to be a person. And, you know, I have heartbreaks that I feel like I've never actually recovered from. And there's a tenderness to that. It's not that I feel the pain of them in the same way, or they don't, you know, kind of move through my mental space as obsessively as they probably did at periods of my life. But if I'm just sitting, you know, whatever, I live in New York, I'll just go and sit and have a coffee and watch people going by, right? There's every emotion is really kind of there at some level, at some volume. Maybe it's a low level, but I can still access the love I felt in those relationships and the pain and just the loss. And I can also access the sweetness and watching other people walk by and they're actively in love. And I don't find that it actually, like, you know, dampens or taints my experience to just still have little traces of that in myself. That's a part of who I am now, you know, all of those things that have happened to me. And I feel like when we love ourselves fully, we love that part of us too. We love the excitement and about the next love. We love the anxiety about the date we're going on. We love the embarrassment of the things we said during the last breakup. You know, we can love all parts of ourselves and keep them with us and still move through our life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Good point. I mean, we're all human and we all deal with uncertainties, loss, sadness, you know, pain in different, on different levels. And also too, like it, when we, you know, they always say, what is it? The thoughts, we have the thought first and then the emotion follows after. Mm-hmm. So it's also too, like what the situation means to us. Like sometimes, I mean, just depends upon the level of intensity, but, you know, for one situation, one person could be sad about another situation, another person could be seeing it as an opportunity just based on how they perceive the situation, like through their mm-hmm. mental lens, right? So a lot mm-hmm. of it too is just how you're processing the event, like how, what it means to you.
Right. The meaning we make of things, for sure. In terms of that, like, you know, kind of age old question, are thoughts and feelings really different? Which one comes first? I think that, you know, it's more like a philosophical question to me than a biological one. I do think the jury is kind of still out, although I come from the somatic camp. So, you know, the science that I sort of follow would lean toward more actually the feeling comes first, right? Like both in our lifespan, like age-wise, like we begin with feeling and then develop more toward like what we would traditionally mm-hmm. call thought. Mm-hmm. But I think even on like a, you know, a nanosecond sort of level, we do tend to, I believe, have the felt sense of something first and then we make meaning of it, right? So that's actually another case, an argument for just being present, because if we can stay present with the feeling before we create a whole story about what it means about us, about our relationship, about the world, we actually have a better chance of moving through it without doing as much damage kind of to ourselves and to our self-image and our worldview. And so I mean, I love the whole discourse around like we can control our thoughts to a large extent. But I think sometimes what people take away from that is that your thoughts, if you just kind of switch the channel on them, will totally control your emotions. And the science just doesn't show that. And that's just also not like the experience that I feel people are having or that I'm having. I feel like the emotion is kind of like, again, it's like weather. It's an element that we're dealing with, right? And we have, I believe, more of a choice around whether we're going to allow ourselves to sort of feel the purity of that and try to just keep kind of a stillness mentally with it and a mindful space around like, this is what I'm feeling right now. I don't need to make a whole story out of it. I think that's really where we have some control.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And it's a good point. I think now that I think about it, I think maybe, in well, my opinion, maybe it's both. Maybe sometimes our thoughts create feelings and sometimes our feelings totally. Create thoughts. Yeah.
They're always interchanging. Mm-hmm. They're almost inseparable. So
it's because it's like, you know, people that always talk about how eating healthy, you know, can influence our mood and when we take those tests, like those little psychological quiz tests, whenever, depending upon how we're feeling, we answer differently, right? So yeah. Depending on our mood. So it's like, if you look at all those variables, like what you're eating could influence your mood, and how you even respond to a test, like one of those psych pop quizzes or whatever. Changes the way you answer things. Yeah. So it's just interesting. When we really start to pay attention to how everything can influence us and,
I mean, I think kind of what you're speaking to, the question of control is really kind of an undercurrent in a lot of what I'm trying to talk to people about here and what I work with people on in therapy. I think it's also where I see problems coming up, like around the collective discussion of how much should we kind of believe we can control our own destiny? How much can we control our own fate, right? I see that kind of the mistake of people wanting to be too far on either side of that spectrum is more where I see things falling apart for people. Because on one end of the spectrum, you have people who sort of come from the perspective of like, there's nothing that I can control. You know, everything is happening to me. I feel like a victim in my life. And certainly, like objectively, there are forces that are outside of our control that are acting on us and limiting our ability to control things, but to make choices in our own lives. But then on the other side, we have people who are like, you are the complete master of your fate, you know, which is like shaming and ends up being a really privileged kind of point of view and sounds kind of delusional to most of us who didn't grow up, you know, with like everything kind of set before us. And so I think, you know, part of what I really hope people will start to soften on is just that idea that it's one or the other. It's probably not, you know, we're not going to really ever figure that out realistically. In any one life, there are just an enormous amount of variables that we really could never account for, internal, external, genetic, social, familial. But we don't need to, because really probably there are things in our control and there are things that are not in our control. And it's much more of, in my opinion, a positive or like a kind of a more healthy and fulfilling way to live to open to the whole mystery of it and just feel like, you know what? Here I am. I don't know. I don't know if going to this college and working my ass off is going to result in what I want. I don't know if, you know, these decisions are the right thing, but I'm working with limited information and I'm just staying present to what's true. And if a feeling comes, I don't need to label it good or bad. I can just experience it and see what's there for me. And I think that's ultimately, kind of ironically, a more positive framework than like, I'm going to sort through every emotion and decide if I think it's bad. And if it's bad, I'm going to reject it, you know, because mm-hmm. I can control that. Like, good luck. I mean, honestly, like, good luck. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work.
Yeah. I always look at it as when things happen to you, how you choose to respond, right?
Yes.
And yeah,
it's a simple way.
How do you choose to respond, you know, process it and then choose like react by, you know, processing and then choose to respond, you know, listening to podcasts like this, reading books, like it, you know, I can speak from personal experience, like, you know, personal development, self-help, like all these things helped me refine my ability to, I guess you could say, deal with life, right? Like, you know, to make better choices, have those tools to be able to navigate through challenging times or times when you feel like you're in a pressure cooker or whatever, what have you, right? Or, you know, navigating through relationships and breakups and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's an ongoing journey for me. I'm nonstop, like,
yeah,
you know, learning about the mind. We're still learning about the brain. Like, it's still study, you know, there's still stuff that needs to be explored about the human brain. You know, and we're only using what they say. We're only using 10% of our brain today.
Yeah. I'm always curious. I think that, yeah, it was like at a time, maybe. I don't know how they measured that. What does that even
mean? That's a good question.
Right?
That is a good question.
When I hear these statistics, I have done very little research, but I have several friends that are researchers and I just like to call them because they're so blunt with me. Like, I'll be like, so I wrote this in an article and they're like, look at the methods, you know, look at you got to read the article. It's sometimes really hard to actually draw a broad conclusion from research because it's so hyper-specific to what they're looking at. But
there's so
much we don't know about the brain. The brain is... Studying the brain with the brain is part of the trip.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. We're complicated creatures.
Yeah.
You know, and we're very complex. And that's why it's so important to read a book like yours and learn how to, you know, deal with our emotions and feel our emotions and process them in healthy ways.
Yeah.
So what are ways that are healthy to process it? Like, obviously, everyone's talking about journaling. You know, obviously talking with a therapist, right? When dealing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love both of those things. I love journaling. I love therapy, obviously, but I'm a big believer in relationships. And so I was just thinking of a quote that I'm probably going to mess up. My favorite author, Adrienne Rich, she said, an honest human relationship, I think it was one in which two people have the right to use the word love, is a process. You know, it's delicate, violent, and often terrifying to the people involved. But it's important that we do this because it does justice to our complexity. And that's just another way of saying, like, talk to people about the truth of what's happening for you and be willing to hear them. And yes, is it important to check in, you know, in some way so that you're not, air quotes, trauma dumping? Although I feel like people kind of misuse that too. You know, every time you talk about something hard, you're not trauma dumping, right? Like, life is hard. Simply expressing that you're having a difficult time is not the same as asking someone to fix it. So that's first and foremost what I want people to know. But yeah, mm-hmm. we need to be careful. We need to be careful who we trust. But also mm-hmm. just saying, like, I am having a shitty day and I'm sitting with, you know, the heaviness of uncertainty or loss. Like, that's not really actually that vulnerable of a statement. I just really think people are kind of like right now really trepidatious because of how much we've all been through the last few years. Nobody wants to like put that in someone else's hands. Nobody wants to be hurt, you know, by someone they don't know, or, you know, have someone betray our trust. But just saying that, the reality is most people are going to nod. They're going to be like, I know that feeling, even if I'm not feeling it right now. And you can't really hurt me with that. Like, that's another thing that I feel like I wanted people to know is like, no one can blackmail you with just the knowledge that they saw you crying. Mm-hmm. That's not actually going to open you to someone in, you know, a way that is that scary. I mean, it can, sure, it's scary. You got to get used to it. But I really want people to try. You know, I want everybody to sort of practice just being open and authentic in that way, both about the difficult stuff and the tender, exciting stuff. Like when we're in a new relationship or we're scared because we really want a new job or we're trying a new thing. Just tiptoeing into that and being ready to hold space for others when they share that with us. That would be kind of my hope, that people would take that away from the book, because relationships are how humans get through these things. We get through them together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree. And that's why, I mean, I really love the beauty of support groups, you know, yes. people like forming support groups for going through a similar event, and getting together and just, you know, it creates a safe space because you have that commonality right. that you all share that experience, and, you know, you're all just processing and sharing your experiences of that, how you experienced it or what you thought about it or how that made you feel, which is it's a different perspective or a different way than the other individual. So mm-hmm. it kind of is such a, obviously it's a great release. And also you're bonding with others that went through the same thing. So it makes you feel like you're not alone. Okay. And also you feel like it's appropriate to share that because mm-hmm. everyone's, you know, I do have a memory of one time I went to a party, and because speaking of, you know, people feeling guilty for sharing unpleasant things, it was a dinner party, and so we all came, and you know, everyone's all happy. And there was one girl that showed up, and something bad happened to her. You know, she had just like she had a house flood, I remember, and she was like, it just kind of happened, and she was kind of sharing a little bit of details, but she kind of stopped herself because she felt guilty for talking yeah. about this. And it could tell, like, you know, through her facial, her body, that she was like, you know, upset. And it was kind of like a new trauma, right? So, but I saw her stop herself and feel so bad, like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm talking about this. And she's trying to switch it off. And and no one said anything like, you know, oh, it's okay, you know, you can share. But yeah, so it is a real thing. People really do feel like they need to put that happy face on. And if they do kind of share anything that's unpleasant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is our norm.
That's a very, I mean, I feel like that's a really relatable example. Did you end up enjoying the party? I'm curious.
Yeah, we did. It was, okay. I can't remember what kind of, I think it might've been a baby. It was like a long time ago, many years ago. That memory just stuck with me. I think it was like a baby shower. Yeah, it was a baby shower.
Sure.
So it was fun.
I mean, look, I get it. You know, like I remember there was years ago, you're making me think about parties I've hosted. I think one of my good friends was going through something really hard on a year when I was hosting. It was my birthday. And so it was my birthday party. And I do remember thinking like, you know, everybody was kind of sitting with her, holding space for her at that moment. And I remember feeling, I was really young, like kind of envious, you know, like, oh, she's getting all this attention. And so certainly I can understand and relate to, you know, that these are negotiations that have to be made. We don't want to just like abandon social rapport or social skill, right? We want to attune to one another. But at the same time, I have way more memories of being at parties where I felt like this unspoken pressure for everybody to stay up, not just happy, because it's not even about positivity. It's about like just staying at kind of the surface of your experience, because people are also really threatened if you kind of sink into your own joy too much too, or your own pleasure. Like if you're enjoying eating something too much and you're kind of, your eyes are closed. I'm this kind of eater, you know, my eyes are closed. I'm like breathing in. I'm making sounds. What is that movie? Oh my God.
Meg Ryan. And
yeah, but I was thinking
Billy Crystal.
Yeah. But then there's the one about the therapist where he becomes obsessed with his therapist.
I might have missed that one.
No, it's some guy who he's obsessed. He's like stalking his therapist. It's actually, I should revisit that now. It's been years. Anyway, so, you know, scenes where someone's enjoying something too much.
When Harry Met Sally, that's the scene that comes up to
mind.
That's
the one. That's for sure. Oh my gosh, this is going to drive me wild. Yeah. So, but I mean, what I'm just kind of remembering is so many times where I feel like I was like socially scolded for kind of going too far into any one experience. And that is worse to me. Like, I don't want to go to that party. I find it exhausting. I personally find it very tedious. And I start just kind of thinking about like the work I could be getting done. I'm like, okay, so I'm just sitting here and I have to pretend to not be feeling anything very much. I just want to go home and like finish putting together my new bookshelf, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that these days as, you know, technology has advanced. It's making our workloads even more busier. So I feel like I've noticed that a lot of people are turning into more homebodies. I mean, I'm noticing that. A lot to probably the pandemic. We got people got used to being home more. Yeah. So a lot of variables involved.
What About Bob? I think it's called What About Bob. Is that? I'll have to
double check.
I think it's Bill Murray. Oh my God.
Wait a second. Wait a second. So is the therapist? Maybe I'm confused. There's one other movie with a therapist, but I think the guy's in the mob. And I think was Robert De Niro. I think it's another movie like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should see that. No, this is a very lighthearted, like a comedy, which I haven't seen in years. But I just remember the scene where he's really into the food. Yeah. I think that people wanting to stay home. I don't know if you're finished with that thought. I don't want to cut you off. But
No, I'm finished with that thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've never been much of a homebody. I'm definitely more of a homebody now after the pandemic, but this has been coming up in several interviews, and my way of making sense of it is that people went through something really traumatic and it's really hard to pretend to be okay when you're not. It's like, it's just hard to be inauthentic. It takes a lot of energy. And I think maybe for the first time for a lot of people, they're wanting to connect, but they don't know how to push that stuff out. Maybe this is for a lot of people the hardest thing they've ever been through. Not for everyone, of course, but for those folks, I think what they're needing from connection is different now. And I think I would just like to, if you're a person who's listening and you've experienced that trepidation or that hesitation to go be with people for the first time and it's scaring you, try going and being as authentic as you can and choosing your relationships based on people's reaction to that. And again, I don't just mean negative emotions. I mean, just being honest about what's true for you in the moment. And if people are not able to reciprocate and respect and meet that with curiosity and even interest, and almost excitement. Like, I feel so much joy and relief when someone is honest with me about anything. I can tell. And I'm like, oh, good. We're not pretending here. If that's not the response you get, you know, maybe that person isn't quite in the space that you want or need right now. That's just kind of my homework that I've been giving people. See if it exhausts you the same way. Maybe it will. I don't know what's true for everybody. But I just feel like if you're able to be yourself in whatever capacity, you're probably not going to feel that you need to run and go home as quickly.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah. And you want to be in a space where you can be yourself. You know, you want to have those authentic, real connection with people. I mean, that's just, it's the best type of connection. You don't want to feel like you have to put on an act. Cause it is exhausting. You want to have genuine relationships with people. That's a healthy life. That supports your mental health as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we, especially when we're working, you know, you leave the office, you want to just kind of be yourself and relax. And, you know, so it's, and I can't stress enough how important having authentic relationships are to your mental health. You know, and there's so many ways to, if you need to meet new people, there's so many ways to do that. You know, there's support groups, there's social groups that you can join, yacht clubs, you know, hiking groups. There's so many opportunities to meet people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And just like if you're walking down the street, just smile at your neighbor. Like even that is just really therapeutic and feels good to give somebody a smile. Yeah. So where can people buy your book? I know they can order pre-order sales right now, and the book will be released July 11th.
It will.
You know, and a pity party is still a party. Speaking of parties.
Exactly.
The title of your book.
It's still a party that you don't have to do it alone, and it can be fun. I mean, it's pretty much available on most kind of book selling sites at this point for pre-order. I'm not sure when this episode will air, but it comes out July 11th, as you said. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, Target website, all those goodies. And I'm so excited to hear what people think. I'm so excited to potentially, hopefully, hear people's experience with the activities. But the solo activities,
right? You've got
social,
there
are group activities. I mean, it would just bring me so much joy and delight to see or hear about how this is going for people, how their little full moon forgiveness picnics are going, how their cry diaries are going. You know, I just want to, I just can't wait to kind of hear how these things track for people and if they have other changes that they're making or other activities that it's prompting them to do. I'm so excited about those conversations.
Awesome. Love it. And you have journal prompts in there as well.
I do. A lot of them.
Yeah. Which is great. So it's not just a book where it's speaking at you. It's also, you know, guiding you through a series of exercises to kind of help you go through it. And yeah, I love it. I love it. I love journal prompts. Love journal prompts. Nice. So guys, I highly encourage you to buy the book. A Pity Party is Still a Party, A Feel Good Guide to Feeling Bad, published by HarperCollins. And the link will be in the show notes for Amazon. Do you have like a website, Chelsea, where people can go and learn more?
Sure. Yeah. Just my name, ChelseaHarveyGarner.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. So if anybody wants to follow along there.
Okay, cool. I'll have that in the show notes too, guys. Her website, ChelseaHarveyGarner.com. And she spells it with an A, not a Y, for Chelsea.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And it was a pleasure having you on the show. Yeah. I enjoyed this conversation. So any closing words before we head out?
No, thanks so much for your questions and thanks for having me today.
All right. Well, thanks. All right, guys. And remember to live happy being well and subscribe so you don't miss another episode.
If you learned something new or were inspired to live happy being well, please be sure to subscribe to the Happy Being Well podcast so you don't miss an upcoming episode. Also, please feel free to leave a 5-star review, including what you learned or what inspired you in today's episode. This podcast is presented by happybeingwell.com, your online store for natural wellness products, so you can live happy being well. Order your next all-natural essential oil, all-natural face mask, all-natural bath soap, all-natural deodorant, herbal tea, crystals including crystal home decor and kitchen items, irresistible leggings, and much more at happybeingwell.com. Free shipping on all orders within the USA.